Okay, I want to start with a little exercise. And what we're going to do is I'm going to give you two options. And you have to choose one. You have to. You can't sit on the fence. You can't choose both. You have to choose one. Okay, and the way we're going to do this is the first option, you are going to raise your left hand out kind of at an angle. And for the other one, you're going to lift your right arm at 45 degrees out. So are you ready? Okay, do you understand the game? Yes or no? Yes, most of you understand the game. Of course, if you put up no, you sort of understood the game, but there we go. That was the humor there. Brilliant. Okay, so here goes for real. If you could have one type of, this is controversial already, if you could have one type of hot drink from now on for the rest of your life, would it be on your left, tea, or on your right, coffee? Are you an early bird on the left or a night owl on the right? When you go out for dinner and you can only afford two courses, so you can't have all three, you only can afford two courses, would they be on your left, starter and main, or on your right, main and pudding? If you could go on one holiday this year, and looking slightly likely, more likely this year, would it be on your left a city break or on your right a rural seaside town? So city break or rural seaside town. Fantastic, well done. Give yourselves a ripple of applause. How did that feel? Some of you were a little bit conflicted. Some of you were very sure on some of those choices. I suppose my hardest would have been, you know, tea or coffee. That would have been my hardest choice out of all of those. Like them both wonderfully. Okay, so today's passage from the Sermon on the Mount finishes with Jesus giving his listeners a clear choice. No one can serve two masters. You cannot serve both God and money. So if I did the actions there, it's God and money. Now, I'm not going to get you to choose that one. I wouldn't do that to you. But he gives us that clear a choice, God or money. What would we do? Maybe it's not simple. Who knows? As we'll see, the analogy from my little game becomes a little bit stretched as we go through the passage. Every single analogy does. But this passage is made up of three kind of connected mini teachings from Jesus that invite his listeners into a life that is all in with God. What we might say, an undivided life. The point of the game was to you to feel that tug between two contrasting choices, because that's what Jesus is offering here. He's saying, will you choose on your left heavenly treasure or on your right earthly treasure? Will you choose a life of light or darkness? Will you choose the God of wealth and possessions, we might say materialism, or the God of the kingdom? Which will you choose? Because you can't sit on the fence. You have to choose. And before we dive into these three short teachings, where Matthew's placed them somewhere, and which says something about what Jesus believes the undivided life is an invitation into and what it looks like. A few weeks ago, John helpfully reminded us that the Sermon on the Mount is most likely compiled by Matthew from the early followers of Jesus. And this sermon, in many ways, is Jesus' most important and frequently taught teachings. He probably said them many times in many different places, but this, if you like, is kind of Matthew's version of Jesus' top 10. Matthew places this particular passage in one section, and he places the sermon as one continuous sermon, but it was most likely brought from various different contexts, brought together for Matthew's readers to read all in one chunk. And Matthew simply arranged it in an engaging way for his readers. But that's really interesting because Matthew had a choice about where he would put different things. And this is really important for this particular passage. Because this passage, if you kind of lined up the Sermon on the Mount, is the very center point of this really famous sermon. The minister and theologian John Stott helpfully points out that up to this halfway point, Jesus has mostly been talking about our inner life, or you could say our private or even our spiritual life, giving, prayer, fasting, our hearts, that kind of thing. It's the kind of spiritual inner stuff that Jesus has been interested in. And after this halfway point, Jesus is going to start talking about much more practical things, or we might say the traditional worldly things: money, possessions, food, drink, clothing, ambition, that kind of thing. And we are right at the center spot. We are right at the halfway line. We're right at the halftime whistle. So what is Jesus going to say in the halftime break in the Sermon on the Mount? Jesus gives us a teaching that invites us into a clear choice and an invitation into a life that is undivided and all in, all for God, all for Jesus kind of life. Now, our problem is, mostly because of the way that we've been brought up in church, we think that all that spiritual stuff, like prayer, the Bible, our hearts before God, is completely separate often from the day-to-day stuff of life, like clothes and food, like kind of those anxious decisions that we might make day-to-day. And often the church has kind of made us believe simply by the way that we do things, like so how this church is built. This is the spiritual bit. That behind you is the kind of bit that we use in the rest of the week. This whole room is set up to use for 2 hours on a Sunday for particularly spiritual things. Now, the problem is that's not what Jesus invited his followers into. He invited them into something much more creative and much more excited. Now, I'm not against worship spaces, of course, but the way that we do stuff is often set up to separate the spiritual from the secular, to separate that stuff like prayer and, you know, the Bible and what we learn from the stuff of day-to-day life. And Jesus says, no, don't choose between one or the other. Have an undivided, all-in kind of life. He speaks of it in a much more integrated, whole way. And actually, he's put this passage right here to link the two. You can't choose between all the spiritual stuff that's gone before or all the kind of seemingly secular stuff that goes afterwards. He's saying there's no divide between the sacred and the secular. In fact, there's no such thing between sacred and secular. In Jesus' manifesto for life, everything is spiritual. Everything has the fingerprints of God all over it. Our work and our worship, doing the hand gestures again, our choices about money and clothes and food are all soaked in sacred heavenly potential and an opportunity to experience the life of heaven now as well as into eternity. Jesus has put these three mini kind of teachings here to say you don't choose between one or the other. It's all in. And I think this invitation is best found in how we view these choices that Jesus gives us in these three mini teachings. So the first one is treasure that is either choose to store up in heaven on one hand that will last, or on earth on the other hand, which he says is temporary or open to being destroyed. Now, like with the sacred and the secular, the temptation is to divide the two. By saying that treasure in heaven is what we get when we die, and treasure on earth is what we have now, we kind of misunderstand what Jesus is saying. Maybe you grew up in a youth group like I did, and often my youth workers would say to us, especially if we were being encouraged to do something that was spiritual that we didn't want to do, or live in a particular way that most of our other friends weren't living, we were encouraged by our youth workers saying to us, don't be sad, don't worry, at least you'll have a slightly bigger mansion in heaven. Don't worry about the rubbishy choices now, because if you make the right choice now, don't worry, when you get to heaven when you die, your mansion will be a little bit bigger. So if you've had a super long prayer time, if you've read your Bible every day for a week, or you've served in some way, well done, because that might feel a bit rubbish now. But at least you haven't chosen treasure on earth, you've chosen treasure in heaven. And we might be tempted to think up that we are storing up treasure for when we die, like a heavenly insurance policy. But Jesus spoke about heaven. Jesus didn't speak about heaven in this way. When Jesus spoke about heaven, he wasn't first and foremost thinking about the place that we go when we die. Not that that's unimportant, that's really important to say. It's not unimportant, but when Jesus talks about the kingdom of heaven, he's not talking about the place that we die. Heaven wasn't first and foremost that afterlife place. Because Jesus said it was available now. So Jesus is saying, put me first in your life, and then you will experience the life of heaven now. Be all in with the God kind of life, both with the inner spiritual life and the outer practical life. Invest in the life of heaven now, both of those things, because if you invest in that life now, you'll know God in this life and in the life to come. You'll know peace now in this life and in the life to come. You'll know contentment even in the midst of earthly challenges and struggles, because you will know God now and into eternity. And then Jesus goes on to talk about a second choice. So that treasure in heaven, it's bringing the life of heaven into the life of God, the life of heaven, into our life now and in eternity. It's not making difficult, rubbishy choices that we don't particularly like now, so we get to experience joy when we die. Jesus goes on to talk about a second choice, one of seeing on one hand and not seeing, light and darkness. And Jesus uses a metaphor to draw out what he means. Clearly, if like me, you have poor eyesight and you don't have very healthy eyes, or even if you were blind, it doesn't mean, Jesus isn't saying that you are full of darkness, because I would be so full of darkness because my eyesight is absolutely appalling. I haven't got my iPad today because I left it at home, and I'm really struggling, as you've probably worked out, to follow the text on these printed pages. So it's like I've gone back to the 90s. The eye in Jesus' day, this is what Jesus is saying, because the eye in Jesus' day was another way of talking about the heart. So Jesus is encouraging us to angle our hearts towards God and God's reality in every area of our life. In the same way we can invest our lives, that is our treasure, in the stuff of heaven, we can fix our attention on God, maybe through scripture or in prayer or through being with others in community and seeing the life and the light of God in them. And it's about seeing the light and love of God at work in our own hearts, but also seeing with the light and love of God. I'm reminded in the Old Testament of the moments that Moses who was called to be that visionary leader of the people of Israel, leading them from slavery in Egypt to freedom into their own land. He would spend time in the light of God's presence up the mountain and would come down, and so the scriptures say his face would shine with the presence of God. Now, we may not literally shine, but Jesus' invitation is that we would see with the eyes of heavenly love as we look out on the world, having spent time in the light and love of his presence. What does looking with the eyes of heaven mean as we see the escalation of the war in Ukraine? What does it mean as we walk past that same person by the tube asking for money on the street? What does it mean as we look on that difficult family situation? What does it mean to look at our bank account with the eyes of heaven, and how we spend our money month by month? And as we let the light in, as we angle our hearts towards God's divine love, we will see the life we live around us with different priorities and values. Maybe with the spirit of generosity and care rather than predominantly self-preservation. Now, just because Moses spent time in the light of God's presence didn't mean that everything ran smoothly for him. And it doesn't mean that everything will run smoothly for us. But it did mean that he was guided and led by God's vision for him and the people of Israel. If we want to see with God's light, to see with God's heart of compassion, kindness, and grace, we, in the same way, need to spend moments of our day in that place where we get to soak it in. Even though Lent has already begun, why not decide what that looks like for you this week and in the months to come, if it's been missing from your life? It could be a devotional podcast on the way to work, the Lectio 365 reflection, prayer, and Bible app on your phone over a cup of coffee. If you've never used it, just type Lectio 365 into your app store and you can get it for free. It's a little bit of Bible, it's a little bit of reflection and prayer. 10 minutes, the time it takes to drink a cup of coffee. Maybe it's just reading a Bible plan in your lunch break for 10 minutes. Again, the YouVersion Bible app, there's loads of amazing plans on there that take you through different parts of the Bible. C.S. Lewis paints a great picture of what this can be in the whole of our lives when he says this about the Christian faith. I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it, I see everything else. That's what it means to let the light of God's love in and to see with that light. Jesus invites us to see the light of God, and then by it, we see everything else. And just as light and darkness can't coexist together, so we see from Jesus' final snippet that an undivided life, you cannot serve both God and money. It's true, isn't it? You bring light into a place of darkness, or you bring a warmth into a cold place. And into that, they can't coexist together. Light will always push back darkness. Warmth will always push back the cold if there is a source there for it to drive both those things away. And therein lies the encouragement. Love always wins in the end. Now, the light may seem dim at first, the warmth of God's heart only slightly felt. If we focus our eyes and our hearts on this, it will only get brighter and warmer. And as we land this central piece of the Sermon of the Mount, no one can serve two masters. You cannot serve God and money. Like the stuff of the world, possessions, power, and wealth, if they become the focus of our hearts and we hold on to them tightly for comfort and security, Jesus says essentially that they will take hold of us. Now, my temptation here for this last mini bit is to think that this applies to someone other than me. If I'm honest, I can be tempted to think that it applies to those that are rich or super wealthy. So I can feel a bit self-righteous as I look at this passage because I don't have massive wealth or huge disposable income. But let's remember, if we own a home, a car, if we own a mobile phone, more than one coat, if we have food in our cupboard, if we have the choice of a selection of clothes to choose from, I would say if we had change in our pockets or the ability to tap a contactless payment system, then we, by global standards, are rich. If we have a bank account, if we have any of these things, by global standards, we are all rich. Of course, there will always be someone to our left or to our right in the richness stakes, but Jesus, I think, is talking to all of us. But should we sell up or have no possessions? Should we give everything away? Maybe, I don't want to say no, maybe Jesus did invite one rich young ruler to do such a thing. But we could also choose to be all in following Jesus. We could simply choose choose God over money by seeing our possessions, our stuff, the things that we have, all as good and all as gift. Just like in Genesis 1, God generously creates everything good and sets humanity loose in a garden, and he says, possess it, take ownership of it, steward it, multiply it, and give it away. What if we treated our money and our wealth and our possessions as gift? I reckon we'd be more content and more generous with whatever we had, and we could more easily live the all-in life, because these things wouldn't own us and they wouldn't call the shots. I love what Greg Boyd writes about the economy of God. It's so helpful when it comes to this thing of God and money. He says, receive blessing without any guilt and share blessing without any reservation. What a beautiful way to see life. We should enjoy life. God has given us life as a gift. We should share our lives with others. Our money, the stuff that we have, what God has given us as a gift, we should share it. And we should give it away whenever we can. Investing in God's life now. That this kind of seeing, this kind of heart, choosing the all-in generous life that sets us up. Seeing this, you can tell I wrote this very late in the week, I apologize. Investing in the God life now is that's the kind of seeing that Jesus wants us to have. That's the kind of heart that Jesus wants us to have. Choosing the all-in generous life sets us up for the second half of this incredible sermon. But more importantly, it allows us to loose our grip on the stuff in our lives that will eventually start ordering us around if we hold on to it tightly. Money has a strange way of calling the shots if we grip it tightly. It will start bossing you around if you hold on to it too tightly. But if we turn towards the light and warmth of God's grace-filled, generous invitation to live the all-in kind of life with God, if that's our choice, then Jesus gives us blessing, and he says that we will see differently and we will live differently. And I see that in some of you around, and I love seeing that. I occasionally see it in me as well, and it's a beautifully content way to live, free from the stuff to enjoy life with God and others to the full, free to be generous, free to choose life rather than let the material kind of life control us. That's the invitation at the halfway point of this incredible sermon.